Dubai Eye
103.8. Time now for us to, whilst we get more of your thoughts in, to introduce today's special guest into the studio to review the papers, to bring us all the latest from the world of food and beverage and hospitality, but also to run the line, to give us the 101 on all things Thanksgiving. It is the Director of Operations, Regional Manager from Baker & Spice, and the man behind the new and about to open Kismet down at Dubai Opera. Andre Gershel joins us live in studio. AG, lovely to have you in as always. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you for letting me back on. I love it. It's, it's becoming my new tradition. By the way, I should let you know, this is my third Thanksgiving with Joe McKibben.
Get out.
I swear.
We do.
People will start talking.
They will.
You know?
It's 3 years ago, it was as new to me as it is to you today, Tom.
Well, that's, I mean, you just said there, Andre, that this is your sort of new tradition. I mean, we will dive into head first the traditions of Thanksgiving over the next over the next hour or so. But what for you is the biggest tradition of Thanksgiving? You're a man who grew up in the States, correct?
In New York City, yeah.
Born and bred, New York City. You lived, you breathed, you consumed, you imbibed Thanksgiving for all those years. So when you came here and set up your base here, what's the one thing that you took away from Thanksgiving, the one thing you can't do without?
You know, the funny thing is when you move somewhere, you kind of double down on wherever you're from a little bit. So I became even more American somehow, if that's even possible. I think what I started to do was obviously these big dinners. And so we get together with a bunch of friends and do, you know, like 20-something person dinners, which when I first moved here and had an apartment probably the size of half of a shoebox was fantastic. But it's really about gathering people and cooking together. We don't cook enough, but honestly, the one thing, and I used to hate it, and I can't believe I like it again, but it's a food thing, and it's very gross, and I love it. And it's this sweet potato casserole with marshmallows on top that's baked. And I swear to you, it's delicious. It sounds terrible, but it's so good.
I was introduced to that a few years ago, went round to Thanksgiving dinner. I was like, you know, I can deal with the sort of, you know, the what do we have? We had a turkey that was deep fried in like a vat or something like that. Not properly deep fried. It was like, what's the word I'm using, looking for?
I mean, I like vat. I think vat is just, I think that is the most appetizing way to describe a turkey.
It was no word of a lie. It was an oil drum.
Okay.
filled with oil, but it wasn't some deep fried. It was just slow cooked in this thing. It was the most delicious bird I've ever had in my life.
That I believe.
Because it was slow cooked for a while and it retained all its moisture, but it was crispy on the outside. Mm. It was just brilliant, but I'd never seen this method of cooking ever before in my life.
Stuffing or cranberry guy?
It's a tough one.
Me? Yeah.
I'm a stuffing kind of guy, yeah.
More not into the cranberry sauce. That's also a big one.
I like a cranberry, but, you know, in moderation.
But you see, I really like the sides of Thanksgiving because it's with macaroni cheese. Mm, mm. So it's turkey and macaroni cheese and marshmallows and sweet potatoes. It's so random. I love it.
It is.
Random for me.
It is cornucopia style, for sure. But I think it's always interesting whenever I have Brits over for proper American Thanksgiving, and we put aside our colonial history, of course. Having that marshmallow sweet potato
you had
casserole.
To go there, didn't you, yeah?
Yeah, it's the one.
You just had to go there, didn't you? Yeah?
It's awful. It's just blame me.
3 minutes in, and he's gone there already.
But it's great to get together and cook for people. I think that's the thing I really miss the most, is getting everyone around the table, and that's really the key.
Double Z, Thanksgiving, big for you, big in the Philippines?
Not really big in the Philippines, but American food is big in the Philippines. We've got a big American influence. They stayed in our country for a few decades, so yeah, love mac and cheese too.
So if I say Thanksgiving to you, which will be celebrated not just in America, but around the world tomorrow, what does it mean? What's Thanksgiving mean to you?
I don't really know the history of Thanksgiving.
But what's the one thing that pops up into your mind? See, I'm gonna sound silly here because you say Thanksgiving to me, and I think pumpkin pie.
That's a good one.
And I think pumpkin pie straight away. Is there anything that you think?
I'm thinking family reunion.
Oh,
food
look
aside.
At you! You had to go over the safe one, didn't you? You know.
What?
I went the pie, you went family.
She's so good. She's so good. We went for food and indulgence and vice, and she's like, oh, family.
Joe?
Black Friday, shopping.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a good one, too. That's a good one, too. Now they have Cyber Monday, too. You don't even have to leave your house. You can sit there in your food coma and click away. It's great.
Let's do a quick History 101, if we can. What is Thanksgiving?
So effectively, it's meant to commemorate Protestants who had moved to New England in the early 1800s, and to commemorate the fact that they had cohabitated with the natives that were there, and as an attempt to reconcile with previously hostile relationship, create a family gathering meal.
Nice.
What I actually love historically about American Thanksgiving is something that's kind of kitsch, but have you guys ever heard of the presidential pardon of turkeys? It was something that was resurrected by the original, by Bush Sr. In 84. Mm. And he brought back this tradition of pardoning one turkey on American Thanksgiving.
Oh,
so
yeah.
One turkey gets out completely okay. And it became this really sort of kitsch tradition for that everyone sort of expected. And it gets a ton of coverage, by the way, on all of the news stations. But literally, the president of the United States comes out and there's two turkeys sitting there and he pardons both turkeys.
So and they get that's it. They now survive Thanksgiving.
They live in the White House. They literally live there year round. They're very well taken care of.
Really?
Yes.
In a wing.
That's good. Oh, it's good. Oh, it was good. I'm going to give 2 points to that. That was good. Probably yes, in a wing.
There we are. Bigger than Christmas in the States?
Ooh, no, I don't think so. But to be fair, as a New Yorker, Christmas is amazing.
Okay.
Christmas in New York City is like a special thing.
So in terms of, but it is a national holiday, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Nobody works on Thanksgiving. Everybody goes home for Thanksgiving. There's actually one of my favorite expressions that I ever learned in college is that it's called being turkey dumped. It's when relationships that started up in the early fall end up ending around Thanksgiving. Why, you might ask? Because you might have to introduce your significant other to your parents.
Brilliant.
Because you have to go home. So it's called getting turkey dumped. And it was one of my favorite things.
So is it just one day off, or is it sort of long weekend?
So it's always on a Thursday. So usually you have exams on a Wednesday if you're a student, or you get out. And it's actually a really exciting time to come home. You come home with about 47,000 kgs of laundry. And that is probably more so my Thanksgiving tradition than anything
else. And you leave home about 47,000 kilos heavier as well.
Exactly.
Don't you?
Yeah. But everything's folded, so it's great.
Andre Gershel's here in studio. He's about to open Kismet down at Dubai Opera. We'll talk about that in just a little while. But lest we forget, he's here to review the papers and, of course, tell us about the stories that have caught his eye in recent days. An interesting one of them, the first one, with regards to the Emirati racing driver. Very topical at the moment in light of comments coming out of the FNC yesterday about the role of sports in our schools at the moment for both boys and girls, men and women. What was it about this story that caught your eye, Andre?
There's a bunch of things. Number one, obviously, it's about female participation in typically male-dominated sports, such as racing, the fact that it's an Emirati national, and the fact that she's a teenager. And the fourth thing is that her father was a well-known racer in Le Mans.
Yeah.
So I love everything about this story. It shows the fact that her dad really wanted her to race. I love that. I love the idea of a dad kind of supporting the legacy of his daughter competing in sports. And I love that it's actually Formula E. Everything about it is so avant-garde. So Formula E, for those of you who don't know, is for electric car racing. She's 18, and her name is Amna Al-Kubaisi. She's the first Arab woman to take part in Formula E test. She's 18, and she'll be racing for the first time ever in Riyadh.
Brilliant.
I love everything about this story. It's actually great.
It's sort of the future in a story, isn't it?
Because, literally.
When Formula E came onto the scene in, 2014, I thought, this is never going to fly. It's never going to take off. But it has, and the sponsors have really come onto board. The teams have really come on board to it as well. It's got a big future, and I think it will be one of those formulas that's able to dominate in years to come.
Absolutely, and I think the idea that the first time she's ever racing is in Riyadh, so close to after the legalization of women driving. It's just, this story is great. And the fact that it's an electric car in an oil sort of rich economy, that's another amazing thing. There's so many sort of juxtaposed elements here that I really like. And I thought it was such a relevant story for today.
Great story, and one that I'd like you to comment on as well. Do get your thoughts into us on 4001. Are you a petrol or an electric car head? I was going to say something else, but I won't on this occasion. Will you be heading down to Abu Dhabi this weekend? I know you've got plenty on your plate, but would you?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I actually really love the races themselves. The parties and the other things that are involved with the races are great, and it's very festive, and the environment is super fun to be around and energetic, but I love the races. And it's funny because everybody, the most expensive tickets are where they're most likely to be crashes. I love that. I mean, we're both rooting for failure and success simultaneously in the same breath. I love that.
Listen, Andre, you're with us for a bit. We're going to get some more stories coming your way in just a few moments' time. We have been talking Thanksgiving because it is being celebrated the world over tomorrow. A couple of people have been texting in about that. Double Z, what are people saying with regards to all things Thanksgiving?
Oh, we've got Naranjana who said, feeling very nostalgic as you guys are taking me back to my uni days in Illinois.
Now, what I didn't realize is that every state has a specific Thanksgiving tradition. I've just been looking through them here. And apparently, Illinois, you won't find a table in Illinois without classic mashed potato on it, served as part of the turkey dinner. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. I mean, I have yet to do a traditional Illinoisian Thanksgiving. So I think I can speak confidently to the state of New York, but I don't know about Illinois. But I believe, I mean, mashed potatoes is kind of a centerpiece to most. Yeah, turkey. I mean, even for Christmas traditions in the UK, right? I mean, you guys do roast turkey.
No, you wouldn't have mashed potatoes.
Never? Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Andre, careful.
The potato gauntlet is thrown.
Indiana. Apparently, peanut butter cookies are a must. You've got to have those. On a table in Indiana.
Okay. I mean, I would eat those year-round. Why only Thanksgiving?
Iowa, you got to... Thanksgiving potatoes. Would not be Thanksgiving without monkey bread.
Oh, I actually do know what that is. That's delicious.
What is it?
It's this pull-apart rolls. It's made with a ton of honey and sugar, so it's like buttery and sweet. It's really good.
What's not to like about that?
Nothing.
Eh? Bread that is buttery and sweet.
Yeah, literally.
This one's from CNN, Andre, Dubai and Saudi Arabia. Towers in Time as the... is there a competition going on at the moment?
Well, I love the opening line. The race to the top has just gotten tighter. Dun, dun, dun.
Love it.
Drama is thick in the air this morning.
It's like the start to a sort of movie trailer, isn't it?
It really is. Who will build faster? So there's obviously... the Burj Khalifa has held the title for some time. But there is a new tower being constructed, the tower at Dubai Creek Harbor, with completion scheduled for this October, just in time for the coming 2020 Expo. The tower at 3,045 feet or 928 meters aims to take the title of the world's tallest tower. With the 2,723 feet tall Burj Khalifa, also in Dubai, and has held the title since 2010. However, it's got competition. In Jeddah, in Saudi Arabia, it is also slated to finish another tower of greater size and proportion in 2020, with a gleaming vertical will be 236 feet or 72 meters taller than Dubai's creation. If the tower in Dubai wants to hold the world title, even for a short time, it has to open its doors before the Jeddah Tower. And that is the competition.
Just going, reining back a little while, you were talking about the tower, the Creek Tower down at Dubai Harbour, the new one going up here in Dubai. Scheduled for completion by October of next year. So that's less than a year away.
Why, October 2020. Yeah, that would be right.
October 2020.
Yeah. So a little bit over. You can go and see it now. It takes time, obviously,
foundations
to build.
Foundations are sort of coming up, yeah.
100%. And you can see just the mass of the base of the tower because it kind of triangles up. It's actually a gorgeous building.
Yeah.
I've been in Dubai for 10 years, and I know you guys have been here for a while. You're all Dubai veterans in the room. But the truth is, the Burj Khalifa is still beautiful. You still go and you look at it, and you're like, my gosh, it is massive. Mm. It's never not nice to look at. I don't know how they do this, but it always looks cleaner than every other building. I don't know if you've noticed it. Yeah. Always looks. I'm always looking, and I'm like, oh, gosh, that is tough to clean.
And it's creative lighting. The lighting displays they put on it are very creative, and I think they really do sort of add to it and add to the mystique of the building.
100%, although I have to say, I'm super happy that fireworks are coming back for New Year's this year.
Yeah.
Yes. We really needed it. I have a restaurant just in front, and we're really happy to have it back because it does bring a lot of people in.
Iconic buildings in the UAE and further afield. Do send us your thoughts on those one. Fan of a tall building, Joe McKibben? The only reason I'm asking this one, it's a leading question after the stories we were sharing last night about elevators crashing 81 floors.
Oh, that story. I thought we've got to talk about this one and I can't see it now, but people were stuck in
Chicago.
An elevator. Yes, did you see this story?
No, but Chicago. 81 floors is crazy. Do you know, by the way, in the Burj Khalifa, the one thing that's always amazing about that experience, the elevator is so quick. Getting to the top, and you just see the digital thermometer going absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And so you go from like one to, I don't know, like floor 457 in like 10 seconds. It's so quick.
Yeah, your ears pop.
Yeah, 100%.
So this was six people survived a Chicago lift fall in North Michigan Avenue drama, which is an understatement. And they fell, the six people, including a pregnant woman, fell from the 95th floor to the 11th floor in a skyscraper on Friday morning.
Extraordinary. And they had to be cut out. They got stuck in there, didn't they? Mm. They didn't hit the floor, hit the bottom, because it was one of those sort of, they had one band that was left, and that sort of prevented them hitting the bottom. And
what do you say when you get out of that? Do you ever get
are we there yet? Again?
you walk to the 95th floor every time. You
do.
You
literally, you know, calves of steel going forward in life.
Oh, gives them the heebies. Right, let's go to another of the stories that have caught our attention, and the battle against plastics claims yet another victim. Tell me more, Andre.
So it's actually quite a sad story, but yeah. I think it's also relevant as we sort of hear more and more companies adopting the campaign against single-use plastics. It's a big issue and a hotbed issue, especially in the restaurant business. But a dead sperm whale was found in Indonesia, had ingested 6 kg of plastic. Items found including 115 drinking cups, 4 plastic bottles, 25 plastic bags, and 2 flip-flops. Now, the carcass of the whale was 9.5 meters and was found near Kapota in the island of Wakatobi National Park late on Monday. Now, I think what caught my eye particularly on this article is that we are always talking about the effects of single-use plastics, and we consume a lot in the day, in our morning coffee, in our takeaway for dinner.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that we understand, I mean, it's crazy, and this is not the only time that this has happened. In June, a pilot whale died off the southern coast of Thailand after swallowing 80 plastic bags.
It's not... and that just gives you an idea. I mean, that's one beast in our waters, one of millions out there, although the numbers are what we know are coming down. And the fact that can consume so much in the vast, vast oceans that we have gives you an idea of just how polluted the waterways are.
Listen, it has to be sort of a bottom-top approach where it starts with consumers and then starts to affect companies. And I think companies that start... I mean, even Starbucks, I think, came out and said, by 2020, we will completely ban all single-use plastics from our businesses, which is a huge thing. Coffee cups is a major contributor, and so is straws. But I had an amazing opportunity to go to a fish farm in Fujairah a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the tour is amazing, and almost no one's been on it. But there's a fantastic company in Fujairah that's under the auspices of the Crown Prince of Sheikh Hamdan. And he started this incredible fish farm. And normally when you think fish farm, you think tanks and fluorescent light. And it's not. It's these beautiful netted tanks in the middle of Fujairah, right in between Fujairah and Oman. Like, you can see Zigi Bay as a reference point for those of you who know it. And the water was so clean. There was just, the fish are huge. They're teeming with life. And you go feed them, and they have 100% plant-based diet, which means that they're not even, you know, any of the waste being produced by those animals is also good for the environment. Mm-hmm. And it's such an amazing company. And amazing sea bass, amazing sea bream, sustainable hamur. They're even working on salmon now and teaching salmon how to swim the correct way and the wrong way, because salmon go from being freshwater. It was such an interesting tour. For those of you who have the opportunity to look it up, Fish Farm AE is an amazing company. And I think articles like this just generate further support for businesses like that.
Saha has a message for you, Andre. Saha says, I'm a huge fan of Baker & Spice, and I can't wait to visit for the opening of Kismet.
Thank you very much. We look forward to inviting everyone, and including you, Sahar.
It's just after 11:30 in the morning, which means that many of you may well have a cup of coffee in front of you at the moment. How diligent are you when it comes to your coffee? You're very particular. If so, we'd love to hear how you have it and how you only insist on it. Now, the reason we're having this is because I like my coffee, as does everyone here in the studio. And I know that you, Andre, is somebody who best to ask about all things coffee than the man that is responsible for maintaining high coffee standards here in the region with Baker & Spice and all their offshoots as well. What's this one you picked up on? This is from CNN, right?
Yeah, it's about a rare bean that's being grown in the Ivory Coast, and it's called Arabusta. And I think most people know traditionally Arabica or Robusta. Arabica being sort of the premium style bean that everybody knows, and Robusta being more typically for instant coffee. It's got like a thicker texture to it, more body, whereas Arabica has that sort of bitter, sweet flavor notes that you would want out of a really good espresso. But it's very interesting to hear of a totally new bean varietal that's coming out. And specialty coffee has become sort of synonymous now. Now people order coffee And they're very clued in. They want to know where their beans come from. Yeah. They want to know that it's fair trade. They want to know that it's organic. They want to know that it's single origin. And these are very important things. And also, where is it roasted? Is it roasted locally? Is it roasted abroad? Is it mixed with anything? And we've sort of started to treat coffee as a connoisseur's item, and I like that. And it's interesting to hear of a new bean called Arabusta. So it's a bean coming out of the Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire, and it's was originally grown in 1960s at the request of the Ivory Coast's first president, Félix Houphouët Boigny, who wanted something sweeter and milder than Robusta, earning it the nickname the presidential coffee. It sells in supermarkets for 3 or 4 times the price of Robusta, but that's due to the time-consuming nature of processing the beans, which were crushed and dried by hand with old-fashioned methods. And I like that because I think I love the idea of developing countries building homegrown economies like that. You know, coffee. Africa is the birthplace of coffee.
That was the line that just jumped off the page at me. If ever you needed a debate, there you are. Here's the agenda. Good morning, welcome to the agenda. Africa is the birthplace of coffee. 3 hours, discuss.
I promise. I've actually done extensive research on this, and it really is true. So what would happen is that goat herders along the plains of Ethiopia would notice that when their goats got into certain bushes of naturally grown coffee, they would go crazy. They would start jumping around, become very erratic, and they started to realize that the fruit of the coffee tree had caffeine content. And so they dried it out to obviously preserve it, as many good foods are taken either salted or dried out to prolong their shelf life. And then it was roasted and ground up as water, and they started to actually proliferate coffee. But it really is the birthplace of coffee historically. And I think it's unfortunate because a lot of African countries export their green beans. They don't roast them themselves, which means they're then cut with other things, which degrades sort of the brand equity of wherever it was coming from. Whereas if it's roasted in Africa and then sent over, you're at least getting the most true expression of whatever the farmer wanted you to taste.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate it. I love engaging in food debates, and the origins of food is something I'm super passionate about.
This is one from one of our listeners saying, strong, strong, strong with a splash of milk, and it has to be hot and not bitter. Thank you very much indeed for that. How did you take yours? Are you particular about the way that coffee is? Your beans that you use at Baker & Spice and will do at Kismet as well?
Yes, absolutely. We use single origin, organic, free trade Ethiopian beans. We try and trade the varietals. We're going to start a guest bean program where we get other varietals from Brazil and Mexico in, which I think is amazing. But yeah, absolutely. But how do I take my coffee? Black, intravenous, keep it going, just keep filling it up. I need like I need twice as much shampoo as I need coffee. And that is pretty much the amount that I go through a day.
One way we could continue this conversation, if we take it that Africa is the birthplace of coffee, can we therefore take it after this article, and I do hope certain individuals are listening at the moment, that the Ivory Coast is the birthplace of African coffee?
Ooh, now that one, that's a good one. I kind of want to see if we have any listeners from the Ivory Coast that are here to get stuck in on this.
I think
this
the Ethiopians might have something to say about that, though, might they?
Fiercely, yes. And there's a huge Ethiopian community too here, especially in the coffee. There's coffee mafia here. It's a serious game.
It's always good catching up with you. It's always good catching up with you on the eve of Thanksgiving. You got much planned for tomorrow?
My friends have been kind of, I normally cook every year, and everyone decided not to break tradition, even though I'm too busy with the opening of Kismet, is they said, you know what, we'll take care of everything this year. And so I said, okay, amazing. So instead of doing a full turkey, we're skipping to the good part and we're just doing sandwiches.
Nice.
So we're just going to do the whole thing in reverse and do leftovers first, and then sort of eat our way through pies and cakes.
That
and
is a
stuffing.
Nice way to do it.
Yeah, it was a nice way.
You know how we earlier on today asked for people to send in their thoughts on different traditions from different states? Apparently Kansas, if you're from Kansas, is that something? No, you're just
Kansans.
From Kansas.
Kansans.
Kansans. Pinwheels. Cheese pinwheels? Never heard of them. Kentucky, you do chicken and dumplings. Got to be on the table, apparently. Louisiana, it's got to be cornbread dressing.
That seems like two things. Is that one thing or two things?
Cornbread dressing, yeah. It's a stuffing, apparently.
Fair enough.
Which is there? It's got to be the cornbread dressing. Maine. Maine is all about comfort food. So as part and parcel of the holiday, you have chicken pot pie.
That one I know. That's a good one. That's a good one. I like that. But to serve chicken and turkey at the same table does seem odd.
Massachusetts, got to be a bit of cheesecake.
Yeah, that makes sense. But although, as a New Yorker, cheesecake.
Michigan, they love to have a bit of chili as well on the side. Got to be a pot of chili.
I could take that. Yeah, I can live with that.
Really?
Yeah, chili. I like spicy stuff. Absolutely. I like. You know what I really like? Actually, making turkey chili, like with like you know double cooked beans and stuff like that to dip. That's a good. That's also a great way to reuse leftover turkey. Everyone goes to sandwiches straight away, but if you do like a chili, like a turkey chili, that could be great.
They just seem to be all the same sort of things. I mean, people are just sending in the thing for a different state. So, North Carolina apparently have claimed the sweet potato pie.
I think that's a bit like Cote d'Ivoire being the founder of coffee. I don't know about that.
The jury is out, yeah? Listen, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thank you so much indeed for everything, my friend. All the best with Thanksgiving tomorrow. All the best with the opening as well. Kismet, doors open?
Doors will be open hopefully on Sunday. We look forward to welcoming absolutely everybody in.
Thank you so much indeed. If people want to find out more, how do they do that?
At Kismet. DXB on Instagram is the best way to find us, and kismetrestaurant.com.
The world's most expensive ... That's all I've got in front of me. Andre Gershel will tell us more.
So I think this is a good one, especially as we approach gift-giving season, Cyber Monday, Happy Wednesday, Black Friday, all of these things. The world's most expensive items. And I caught this on the BBC, and I know that we're always looking for gifts for loved ones. And so, Tom, I really wanted to share this with you.
Sounds nice.
A scent worth more than 50,000 euros a kilo. I like that one a lot. A duvet that costs 15,000 US dollars. The mystical tea only plucked under a full moon that costs $1,850 per kg.
How do you monitor that?
Headlamps, of course.
But is there somebody observing this? You know, and when would you go into the room and say, prove it?
But by the way, that's a good question. I wonder what that is. So it's on the slopes of the Himalayas. Workers at the world's first biodynamic tea farm wait patiently until the planets align to pick the most expensive tea. I like that one. I wonder why that makes it better. I'm curious. I want to know why that makes it better.
Joe, what do you feel like? Drinker?
I'm sorry. I was lost in the duck eiderdowns in a village in Norway. Sorry, I wasn't on the tea.
Well, back in the room, Joe.
From Norway, a swift carry across to Himalayas. Okay. I honestly think that I like these gifts, but even the rarest fabric on Earth, the once endangered vicuna, is thriving in the Peruvian Andes thanks to a bold plan. But I like this one. Even a duvet that costs $15,000. Just south of the Arctic Circle, a few dedicated Norwegians are keeping the tradition of sustainable eiderdown farming alive and making some of the world's most coveted blankets. I actually think spending money on a blanket is not great. Obviously, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, just go and buy some Egyptian linen or something like that. I mean, that's good, isn't it? You don't need to spend 15 grand on a duvet. But then I suppose if you got it, why not?
I mean, I think you look at the numbers, you know how much time we spend physically in beds? I actually think one of the things you should invest in at some point in your life is a mattress. It shows some form of adulthood, is to say, you know what? My back and my sleep are important. Now, I don't think they're 15,000 US dollar important, but I think definitely investing in sleep technology is an interesting thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's interesting that you bring this one here because we are in the midst of that. Isn't Black Friday is like this Friday, isn't it?
Yes.
Or was that next Friday?
No, this Friday after Thanksgiving.
And as you say, it's funny that was the big, so Black Friday was the big selling day, wasn't it? For ahead of Christmas and the selling period. But it seems to just get longer and longer and longer as years go on, don't they? We're tagging on days around it.
Well, I like the idea of Cyber Monday. So it's really this idea that after Black Friday, in case you miss anything, you can still buy it online. And I love that. And I think it's interesting as we see more people going online to buy stuff. And literally, you can buy literally a toothbrush from Amazon now, which is insane.
I'd like to know your Black Friday online regrets.
Ooh, that's a good one.
There must be many.
That's a good one. What's the worst thing I've ever impulse bought?
But are they worse on Black Friday than just other impulse?
Yes, because it's the impulse. I've actually got to buy this today. I need to buy this perfume that's reduced from, you know, 1,000 dirhams to 200, okay, despite the fact that I've never actually smelt it.
Okay, I know what mine is. But I don't know if it's necessarily Black Friday, but I saw it's more about discount culture. So I saw a bulk amount of of this coconut shampoo. And I saw it at Union Co-op and I went, oh, well, I'm always going to need shampoo, right? So I bought, like, I think it was like 70 liters of shampoo. I put it in the back of the car and I open it and it is the worst smelling thing that ever existed. There's a reason it's a discount, people. All right, people need to know about that. And I keep using it, and I'm so stubborn, I refuse not to use it. And my girlfriend is, like, I think, slowly siphoning it off and poking holes in the bottom so that we stop using it. And it's the worst flavor ever. Do not buy. Am I allowed to say the brand? I don't even want to say the brand.
But what did you pay for it?
Oh, I don't know, but it came, I like sat there and justified it by calculating the bottle, like the ounce per liter. I was like, oh, for sure. And I totally regret it. And I have so, does anyone need shampoo in studio?
Just rebottle it, put it in a trendy little bottle, organic or something otherwise, and do it at the farmer's market.
Oh my God, that's such a great, that's such a great and terrible idea.
It's fraudulent.
It is totally fraudulent. Our farmer's market, you should know, is heavily policed by
exactly.
by Joe at 7 a.m. mostly, just so you know.
The one that I can bring to the table is, go to Andre's house if ever you need to wash your hair. You're covered there. And if ever you need to feed a cat, you can come to mine, because one online shopping platform that will remain unmentioned happened to deliver to us, one big bag of cat food, Whiskers cat food, but 1,000 big bags of Whiskers cat food.
Oh, my God. Wait, did you...
Let's just say we didn't report the mistake, okay?
How long did it take to unload?
It took a while.
They didn't call you and say, sir, how many cats do you have?
No, there was none of that. And there was none of the... So let's just say we're covered when it comes to cat food at the moment.
Dry you could cat go food, to the farmer's is. Market. Too.
Yeah, by the way, why don't you come to the farmer's market and repackage it as, you
organic
know.
Organic bites.
Yeah. Tommy Hughes, organic bites. I think there's an actual business model to be made in here.
It's just regifting, you know. We're coming into the regifting season. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Oh my God, right. Cat food. That's a good one.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.